Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I'm Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. For our 100th episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Chris Mayle. Chris is someone that has seen more than most across the Salesforce ecosystem. From starting his Salesforce career working for Salesforce back in 2008, to building a consulting business that was acquired by Deloitte, and then going on to be a partner for PwC. Chris shares his story and offers insight across a range of topics. I'm sure you'll get some value from this episode, and I hope you enjoy hearing from Chris as much as I did.
Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know I've been a pain in the side and I've been nagging you for probably years now, but yeah, great to have you as a guest.
Well, thank you. And it is great to be here. I think it's been quite a few years that I'd get a message from you every so often going, can you jump on? But yeah, you caught me at the right time. So I'm really, really excited to kind of have a chat because we're in such an interesting time of the year. The East Coast is going on to lockdown and there's so much to talk about. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, the first question I have for you, everything you've achieved over the years in the Salesforce ecosystem, where does being the 100th guest on this podcast rank?
pretty high, as long as you send me some new swag, I think. So I notice you're not wearing your usual hoodie, so maybe you can send me one of your personalized ones. Like, I'm really impressed. 100 episodes is an incredibly difficult task to get through, 100 interviews with people. So to yourself, congratulations for making it to that 100.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It looks like I've got a cricket jumper on celebrating the century, doesn't it? So, well, we'll dive in because we've got a lot to talk about. I've got so many different topics to run through with you. And for anyone that might not have come across you in the ecosystem before, you've been in the Salesforce world for a very long time. You worked for Salesforce previously going way back. So what was it that first attracted you to joining Salesforce and what was your role at that time?
Yeah, it has been a while. I'll go back to kind of how I ended up in Salesforce. And I'll be honest, it was a complete fluke. I worked for an incredible Israeli company straight out of university, was working for this organization over in the UK who had an end-to-end financial services product for life insurance, pensions, and then kind of did that whole client acquisition all the way through to policy payout and management. And we were doing a project where we were enabling the brokers to write business into the platform from their own offices. And I thought we did a really cool thing. This is the first time I really kind of had the opportunity to get into like message queuing and distributed processing. And it was really, really interesting. And I thought we did a really good job. And so I did a bit of research about what other organizations are building these sorts of platforms. And I found Salesforce, and this was 2006. So what I thought was a really good job that we'd done, and it was, like, it worked. It worked brilliantly. I kind of looked at this organization, Salesforce, and I'm like, wow, this is something different. Like, this is truly kind of what we were trying to imagine but could never think of something this powerful. So I banged on their door. I said, look, I'm a developer over in Australia. I'd love to come and work for you. Kind of thinking, yeah, I'll get to work inside product and this would be amazing. And landed in the professional services team in the Australian office. They're in Darling Park. I think they had a quarter of one floor. So it's a tiny little space. And I sat next to the support team, Peter Zhang, and he's still there. Wonderful, wonderful guy. And there's so many others that I've worked with over the years. I wish I could name them all. And I was in the mothership and it was just crazy. It was the time of the quick start. So as a software development background, this is before Apex was talked about. It was kind of alpha in the day. Like, we knew it was in there, but even we couldn't kind of touch it too much. We kind of saw stuff coming. It was the days when you couldn't create any new tabs. Everything was fixed. S controls were there, and which were a security nightmare, and every cyber team would just be petrified about what we used to be able to do. And it was just fast. Like, you were just running from client to client, trying to understand what they're trying to do and then shoehorning it into this platform that was just growing with features and functionality at a ridiculous rate. It was brilliant.
I had Carl Vescovi on the podcast before, and he referred to you as, like, you were the developer back then. So, like, you taught him, I think, S controls, or it might have been, was it Apex that was just, you kind of taught him his first line of Apex, or it probably was S controls back then.
It was
Visual Force would have been after Apex, right?
Yeah, Visual Force was still a long way out. It was, I still remember meeting Carl. And it was kind of interesting being, as you say, the developer, but in the professional services team. And I kind of ended up having 1 foot with the support guys and 1 foot with the pro service, because all the customers were off writing code as well. And we were off writing code, and you never really knew if it was a platform bug or if you kind of built something the wrong way. So, but yeah, as you know, Salesforce well, they would kind of come up with new features, new stuff, and everybody would kind of consume those releases and then start to kind of reimagine the possible and try and build whatever they could build. So yeah, you're just running around and kind of helping each other kind of, oh, there's a weird bug here. Is it, have I done it the right way? Have I done it the wrong way? Or do you think we might be able to make it do this? And you come up with these harebrained schemes of just building S controls to kind of manage really complex processes with kind of Salesforce underneath. So, but yeah, I remember sitting with Carl, and yeah, I didn't teach him, I didn't train him. I think we kind of sat there and hacked something together that the client needed, and we were on a deadline, and that's the way it was. And that's what we kept doing. And I guess it probably really hasn't changed too much today.
And then Quattro came along, and I guess at this point we saw a few different partners spinning up. So I don't know who was first, but I've had like Patrick on the podcast in the past.
Pat was out there first.
I know Sean Stillwell was around with SquarePeg. But where did the idea of Quattro come from, and was there much competition at that point?
You mentioned all the old boys and the old team. So Sean was out, I think he was the first. He had to be the first, or if not one, the first two. Ryan Hallman was already out, I think. So he had his business. There were a few more. And where it came from was, as I kind of mentioned, you were kind of running fast. So you do the quick start was how Salesforce sold the product. And they're focused on ACV, not necessarily professional services fees. And they were important, but, you know, it's more about the licenses. And that previous company that I worked for were kind of, and I'm forever thankful for them, they were kind of showing me the consulting way. And that's where I learned that first bit, where I've been put on the client side for a long time. And I'd kind of been taught, really listen to the customer, really understand what they need and help them grow with the product and also help the product grow with them. So part of Quattro was exactly that. We were leaving so much value behind and so many more interesting projects. We would get Salesforce up and running with an organization, and then we'd kind of have to leave and hand it over to them to be successful on their own, or for them just to kind of take the product that we've done and keep going. So we kind of scratched our heads, and I wish to say it was my idea. It wasn't my idea. We didn't go too far with the name. There were four of us, and we kind of said, you know what? There's more value that we can have. There's a better delivery that we could have, a longer relationship we can have with the customers. So we span out and off we started. And it was, I say, I was absolutely naive. I thought this was going to be easy and, you know, a little bit of hard work. I was very young. I still remember creating a spreadsheet where I knew I could put in every sale we made, and I knew what date I wouldn't be able to afford rent, and I'd have to move into my friend's and live on her couch. And I'd already had that conversation with her to say, look, this is what I'm doing. And she's like, you're crazy. You're working for this amazing like American company that pay for your healthcare and everything, and you're doing this. But we made it. And the very first month, so I did amazing colleagues, partners. We were essentially married to each other, because we spent every moment of every day with each other kind of trying to make this business work. But we were all also a little bit different. One was more focused on the business and kind of operationally where we're going, what we're doing, but also really good at kind of sales and kind of professional services and kind of managing that. I was the dev guy and the tech leader. You had Matt, who was really focused on kind of delivery and project management and kind of making sure that we're doing the right things, we're scoping the right things, we're delivering the right things. And then Paul, who I absolutely credit to teaching me the value of sales and the value of client relationships. And because we were all so different and we all kind of respected each other in what we did, we worked. So, and we got through it. Like the first, there were some amazing roller coaster rides as we went through it. But yeah, a bit of luck, a bit of hard work, and we kind of got out the other end. And nearly 5 years to the day that we started it, we signed the papers with Deloitte.
Yeah, nice. And we'll get on to that. But obviously, between starting and 5 years and selling the business, there was a lot of success and ups and downs, like you said. How did because Salesforce was still relatively new and there can't have been much talent in the market. How did you approach building out your team?
I think it's actually got harder today than it was back then, because I think everybody today knows what Salesforce is and they all want to come into the ecosystem. Back then, yeah, you could say, hey, come and work on Salesforce, and people would be like, I don't know what that is. So through relationships, one of my first, was he the first employee or one of the first? Nishir Uddin was this wonderful guy who was in Australia finding it really difficult to find a development job. And he was a developer from back home. And we found him through the network. And he came in for a bit of an interview. We had this tiny little office that you could barely fit two people into it, and we had four people sat in there already. And yeah, through the network, we started to find people like Nishir, and we had a great conversation. We showed him what the platform was. It was funny, back then, the interviews were less kind of, how do you write code? It's more, let us show you what we're doing, because it's a bit different. Do you want to kind of come and work on this sort of stuff? Kind of show them the intricacies of the challenges that were working on the platform. And yeah, we were really lucky. We found some great people that wanted to learn. They kind of bought into that vision that we had about doing more with our clients. And they also kind of saw Salesforce and they kind of clicked. They kind of go, wait, I can be a developer, but I don't have to do all that stuff that I used to have to do. It starts to do more of it for me. Like a great example, if you ever ask me to, and there'll be many of my old colleagues and current colleagues that will laugh at this, you ask me to do a front end, it'll be very functional, but it really won't look very good. But with Salesforce, I could create things that the customers thought were amazing. Like you can just drag and drop and move things around and make it fit their business process, and you were a hero. Without Salesforce, I couldn't do any of that sort of stuff. So that's how we kind of filled the resource gap, is we found raw materials that were eager to learn. They came with the background of kind of self-learning and just kind of getting stuck into it and figuring it out. And we brought people into the business that weren't necessarily kind of thinking, a life in technology. But with Salesforce, it's a little bit less about the technology and a lot more about the customer and what they're trying to do. So we were able to find the right people.
Was it a case of like you find one and then it's like, do you know anyone else? Or do you, because you've hired brothers, right? You've had people.
Exactly. Yeah, the Hunt brothers. Yeah, we do. Absolutely. Like we prided ourselves on having an organization that was fun to work in. Like we always wanted to have that. How do we have fun with serious intent? Because we knew amazing colleagues and employees would attract other amazing people. So yeah, it was all about having fun. I think that's the bit that you want great people to work for you. You've got to make it fun for them. And I know there's always challenges, there's always difficulty, there's always deadlines and there's always pressures, but you got to have fun whilst you do it.
100%. Yeah, like it's funny because I sometimes I see the Quattro brand on CVs, and like I was having a coffee pre-lockdown with Colin Cresswell, and I didn't know he'd worked with you guys before.
Colin.
Just like, there's just this web of people that kind of came out of there, and it's interesting to see so many of them have gone on to be really successful. What do you put that down to?
I think it's down to those individuals. We hired people that loved the outcome, loved kind of delivering great work, and from really diverse backgrounds as well. So you have some that were never written a line of code in their life and wanted to get into the technical side of it, and they're now amazing developers. You have those that have non-technical backgrounds and are kind of pushing themselves now to be a platform architect, or those that had never got involved in sales before and all of a sudden found a voice and they loved the thrill of the chase. So I think for why, and it's great to know that so many were successful out of it, but yeah, I'm just happy to be a part of their journey. I don't accredit it to us. I think it was just the fact that we picked really enthusiastic and just people that love doing what they're doing. And they found that area that was just going to drive them.
Yeah, nice. So you mentioned you sold the business, you were acquired 5 years after starting. How, I mean, a lot of people strive for that, and there's probably a lot of partners out there at the moment looking for that kind of achievement. How did it feel to get that call and to find out that the sale had gone through and all of the hard work had been kind of worth that point?
I think nearly every emotion under the sun over the whole process. So that initial phone call, You're like, wow, okay. And that first meeting, I still remember walking to that first meeting, which was a coffee at one of the, not Dreamforce, the one in Sydney.
World Tour.
The first coffee. And you feel like you're going on a first date again. Like you're just nervous. Like you're meeting these really important people in suits. And all the way through, I remember calling Dave Tan. I think I must have called him every half an hour. Have they called back yet? Have they emailed? And I still remember at one point, I'm pretty sure it was Dave, just like, will you stop calling me? I'll call you when they call me. So it was nervous, it was excitement, it was everything. And then you go through the due diligence and you have to prepare yourself to air your dirty laundry. Every business has problems. Every business has hiccups over the years and they want to know everything. They want to know everything about every employee. They want to know everything about every client. They want to know all your contracts. And that's a little bit confronting to begin with. But once you kind of understand why they're doing it and the due diligence that they're going through and you kind of understand the dance, it starts to get a little bit easier. But yeah, when we knew it signed and it went through, yeah, it was every emotion. It was like relief. We got through it. It was sadness. It was also excitement that everyone that was inside Quattro had a role at Deloitte. And it was also, yeah, it's like, wow, this is a new chapter. And I never thought I would ever work for an organization like Deloitte. I probably didn't even know that they had a consulting business, to be honest. I wasn't really familiar with Big Four consulting. It was something that I had to learn and learn pretty quickly.
Well, you're definitely familiar with it now, hey?
Yeah, a little bit.
So, obviously, like I mentioned, there's probably other partners out there that are looking to be acquired and looking to go down that journey. I know a lot has changed over the ecosystem since you were acquired, however many years ago it was. But what do you think companies are looking for now from the partners that potentially are looking to be acquired? So, what is attractive to a Big Four consulting company or any big consulting company that might be looking to buy a business?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons in my mind. Obviously, there are many more, but I think there's two important reasons in mind why an acquisition is looked at and performed. One is you need a very fast growth of people. So if there's an organization out there that's the right size to be acquired, so part of that is what's it going to cost me to acquire and what's it going to take in terms of effort to bring into the organization and firstly, protect it and then grow it. But if I need to grow a capability incredibly quickly, an additive capability, and there's one that's the right size for me, it's just cheaper and easier than me going to find those people in the market, hire them, train them, build a culture. Like that can take years. So that's kind of the first one. The other one is a little bit more interesting, which is we're not kind of acquiring to grow something we already have. We're acquiring something to differentiate ourselves in the market, potentially not immediately because acquisitions take time to bed in and to kind of make sure everything's connected properly and it starts to grow. But if I've got a strategy, which is maybe to move more into, let's say, cybersecurity in the cloud, maybe with Salesforce, maybe for government, and there's an organization that's already way ahead of us in terms of capability, intellectual property, and people, processes, and that's where my strategy is going, I want to acquire it. And that's kind of what I've seen over the years is these big organizations, they need people or they need intellectual property, and that's what they're going after.
In the Salesforce world, do you think it's important to be more diversified than just, core Salesforce now? Like, do you need additional offerings and expertise and IP to make yourself attractive?
I think yes and no, to give you a terrible answer. If I take my career over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, If I look at myself, I could continue to specialize in Salesforce, which, is getting really difficult because Salesforce is getting so many applications and so many layers and having one person or a team that knows everything about Salesforce is getting really, really difficult now, especially when you put over the dimensions of industry as well, getting really, really difficult. So to be a master of everything, very hard. So I diversified across clouds because I could see organizations that were acquiring things like Salesforce and AWS, or Salesforce and GCP, or Salesforce and Oracle Health Cloud, and how do we make them work together? So I think an organization, if you're a pure play Salesforce, to be the master of everything, I think is really difficult. To have industry models, intellectual property, sales material, accelerators that can hit any kind of Salesforce combination of products or combination of industry is incredibly difficult. So I think you either specialize and kind of bring yourself away from everybody else, or you diversify and solve more holistic system problems.
It's really interesting because of the roles you've had over the years and the seniority that you've been at, the view that you have on the market in comparison to a lot of people that will listen to the podcast. Like, you know, a lot of people are just so embedded in that Salesforce world, and, you know, Salesforce to them is the job. Whereas your view is, you know, all of those different integration points across so many different platforms. So it's, yeah, it's interesting to get your take on that, because I guess a lot of people haven't operated at the level that you've been at.
Thank you. I always get a little bit embarrassed when talk about, I still think I'm a developer. I still love writing code. I love getting on a whiteboard and doing architecture. I think the reason why I view the world that way is not to say I get bored when I'm just in the Salesforce box, but I know that when data's going in and out of it, or in fact, it's actually less the data problem Salesforce are trying to solve with acquisitions of organizations like MuleSoft. I think nowadays is the distribution of the business process. And these are really interesting problems and conversations. I think anybody that's a pure play on Salesforce is really going to start having. When does the customer lifecycle start and finish? How does it interact with the website versus the 14 other tools that also come with CRMs? And maybe operations are looking into one system, whereas marketing are looking into another system, and product managers are looking into a different system. So I think for those of us that are kind of sat and all we know is Salesforce and we sit inside Salesforce, we're still getting pulled up into these wider, more enterprise conversations about, yeah, data mastering is really difficult. Who owns the customer? Who owns the customer interaction? But now it's also going to be who owns the business process around customer, who owns the business process around product, warehousing. And as Salesforce brings on more and more industry tools, those conversations start to get more and more complex as other products start to fight with each other about who has which slice of the pie. So I think to go back to your question, I've had the opportunity to kind of look from really high up as an architect, but also to continuously come down and keep kind of writing code and keep getting kind of my hands dirty with new features and functionality and learning new products. But I think for those that are kind of sat inside Salesforce over the next 5 years, you're going to be looking up and out a lot more as Salesforce buys new products, as they produce new features and functionality, which compete with products that are around the Salesforce ecosystem. So I think the world's just getting much more complex for a Salesforce consultant or a Salesforce developer.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll touch on some of the technology shortly, but just a final point on the acquisition. And I guess it was a long process. Like you said, there's lots of due diligence and you kind of, all the dirty laundry is out there, but then one day it happens, right? And then the next day you're basically an employee of a business and you're working for a massive consulting company. Like, what changed overnight for you? And did you miss what you'd previously had?
I wore a lot more suits. That definitely changed. I think if you look at my LinkedIn profile, you'll see a big four type photo of nice blurred background, suit and tie. But I think what changed, what hit me really quickly was I landed into a firm, and firms are weird organizations from anybody on the outside in kind of how they operate, what's the structure, because you've got so many partners that are all business owners. So we landed, and this blew my mind completely when we started to figure it out. And you don't figure it out on the first day, but there were so many doors that could be opened because a partner knows a CEO or they know a CTO. So it became less about marketing externally, but marketing internally. So, hey, we're the new guys here. We've got this team that do this thing called Salesforce. What's Salesforce? We don't know what that is. We do accounting and and those sorts of things. So it was more kind of, and this took a while to learn, is how do I sell internally about what Salesforce is and what it could do? And that was quite a long time ago when the acquisition happened. Wow, really, 2013. So that was still a long time ago. But that changed over time as Salesforce got more well-known, more famous, that partners would know what Salesforce was before and they'd be like, oh, you guys, I was meeting with this person and they were talking about a Salesforce problem and I said, we've got a Salesforce, can you come and have a coffee tomorrow? And we're like, yeah, sure. And then you realize it's the CEO of an enormous organization and you're like, wow, this would never happen before being inside a Big Four. Like your access to conversations and people, just to have a conversation is incredible. And that completely blew me away. Even to very recently, it would be amazing. You get tapped on the shoulder and, oh, can you come and meet this organization? Like, yeah, absolutely. We love talking about what we're doing and love listening to the customers about what they're doing and having these open kind of advisory type conversations, which was very different to where I was before. Before it was, right, we're selling a scope of work. You want Salesforce. Okay, you want some customizations. This is it. This is what we'll do. Let's get the job going. And what I kind of fell into was more, right, they've got a strategy. Maybe it's working, maybe it's not working. How does technology fit into that? A little bit more agnostic, but then into then the architecture of what they need. So holistically across their enterprise, where are they trying to get to in the next 5 to 10 years? And that was a really big leap for me, going from I just do this to I now need to do this.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. And also you would feel the pressure to perform because you've just sold the business to them, right? So it's not, you need to step up and show it's worth the money they've spent.
Honestly, you're working with some incredible talent and you'd go into meetings and they've got such amazing skill sets if they're in advisory or the strategy team and you see the beautiful works of art that they create for just a coffee meeting. You're like, wow, I don't know how to PowerPoint. So this is really nerve-wracking. So you start to figure out there's some tricks to the trade and how you do this. But yeah, that working with these energetic teams that you'd meet a director who has spent their entire career, let's say maybe working in the transport system, so they know the business process, they know the challenges, they know the laws that are coming through, and you can just have a conversation with them, and they're like an encyclopedia for an industry. So you start to combine that with technical kind of architecture. So we know what the business problem is. We truly understand it now. We can put a blueprint together and then we can go to the client and have a brilliant conversation about the art of the possible. Well, this is what we know you're facing into and this is how the technology can support and solve it. So the sales process changed. It was a really different way of approaching selling and relationship building.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what's the hardest thing about running a consulting business? So you've been involved in three in the Salesforce ecosystem, if we don't include professional services at Salesforce. So what's the hardest thing? And that can be from the smaller end of town with Quattro through to the bigger end of town with the two most recent organizations.
People. And for different reasons. So acquisition of talent, I mean, you know this better than anybody. Finding the right people for your team, which isn't just about technical skill. It's the right people for what you have already that are going to help other people grow and they're going to grow themselves is really difficult. Like there were times at Quattro where we would come across a resource where you just go, you would be amazing for us, but we're not the right company for you. You'll probably want to leave in 6 months, but we would love to hire you. But those are people that I still talk to today. So having that respectful conversation and ultimately finding the right people, incredibly difficult. And then if I fast forward to the bigger Big Four, I've worked with some of the most just driven, just they want everything and they want it today and they want to be the lead architect on a multi-system, tens of million dollars, and they want to do it. They want to do it now. So managing or not even managing, just mentoring those people that are just so driven in learning is super difficult, especially when you've got a big team, because you're going to disappoint people as you go, but you've got to make sure that you're looking after their careers. And as Dave Tan always taught me, my biggest role is really making sure when someone comes and works with me that when they ultimately do leave, either I go somewhere else or they move on to another role or I retire if we work together, that they've got a better CV than when they started. They've learned something. And so doing that at the big end of town with some of the smartest, most driven individuals I've ever worked with is exhausting sometimes. Like sometimes you get to the end of the week and you go, wow, I don't think I've done everything that I can do for my team, because they're always driving for so much more. So it's less about finding people in that, because the graduate intake at somewhere like a PwC or a Deloitte is just phenomenal. Like these kids coming out, they're smarter than I will ever be. You hear about the projects that they've put together and stuff they've built on cloud before they've even left university. I'm like, this is mind-blowing. So yeah, it's still people, but it's a different people problem. It's keeping them energetic and keeping them just engaged in what you're doing is a full-time job, but rewarding, like truly rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine. And in the Big Four world, people are typically striving for promotions and to go up that chain of seniority. You've been a partner, and I think a partner, you know, not everyone knows what that is, but what does a partner do? Like, what is the role of a partner in a Big Four?
You're a business owner alongside fellow business owners. So you're there, you're managing risk is a big part of it. You are helping your fellow partners and their teams support their clients as well. You are a mentor up, down, left and right. You are managing commercial risk. You play so many roles, but really you're just a business owner where you've got your partners around you. You've also got stake in your business. So yeah, it's no real difference to running a small business. You've still got the same pressures. You're still managing resourcing and financials and debtors. And you've just got a bigger team around you to help through those highs and lows. But I think the biggest piece of it is you're a collaborator. You'll have a fellow partner who has got a client in a particular industry and they're facing into maybe a customer centricity type problem or an interaction type problem. And if you've done your job well, they know what you do, and you'll come and talk to their client, see if you can provide even just some advice to begin with. And that may turn into work and paid kind of professional services, but also it may not, but you've provided value to your fellow partner's client.
I thought the role of a partner was just to hang out in that PwC lounge that I saw that one time.
Long lunches and air kisses.
That's it, yeah. So yeah, look, every time I've caught up with you in the past and when we've had coffees, and I love picking your brains on what else is out there, because my role is quite focused on Salesforce, right? And the conversations I have day to day are very much Salesforce focused. So do you expect Salesforce to continue dominating in this space? And what other technology and platforms and businesses out there should we kind of keep an eye on and see, kind of observe what they're doing over the coming years?
Yeah, it's an interesting time, I think, at the moment. I do feel Salesforce, it feels a bit like Oracle now. It's big, it's got amazing products that work, it's got complexity if you kind of buy everything, and there's work for a lifetime. About, I'm going to say 3 years ago, I challenged my lead partner. And I kind of said, because I was in kind of the Salesforce practice, and I said, look, I think it's time that I step away from the Salesforce practice. And I think that was met with a little, not shock maybe, but a little bit of, that's an interesting, what are you thinking? So I looked at the one, I thought, you know, I can see organizations that are, and I kind of mentioned it earlier, they're buying a lot of products. And I think it's getting harder to get the value out of those products that they know they can get. AWS, GCP, Azure, Salesforce, Dynamics, they've all got amazing sales teams and amazing features and functionality. And you can see in the case studies the value that you can get out. So for me, I think the next few years is helping organizations get the value out of these products when they live together. If you just had Salesforce and you didn't have any legacy, Salesforce is pretty easy to kind of turn on and really make work well. But I don't think many organizations fit into that kind of category anymore. There's always a legacy. There's always other platforms. So for me, it's about learning how an ecosystem works together, which is right now for me has been AWS, which I'm have been a fan for many, many years, and nearly all of my hobby projects are on AWS. Google's cloud, which I'm incredibly it's an amazing piece of equipment. When you kind of really get under the skin of what it does, how it does it, the efficiency of just building data platforms on there is just incredible. And Salesforce. I'll never be able to remove Salesforce from what I do. I still have such a fond just view of the product and how it's grown over the years. But where I see those three playing though, and this is the challenge for anybody kind of watching, is you can pick and choose your own adventure. Do you want to become an expert in cybersecurity in multi-cloud environments versus do you want to become an expert in how do we design and build end-to-end business processes that go across multiple clouds versus you just love data and integration and you also want to learn machine learning? So, you know what, as we're moving the data around these ecosystems, let's siphon that off to a machine learning platform as well. Like, there's so much that you can choose, be it an industry perspective or a technical perspective. It's going to be, I think there's really not much stopping someone choosing their own adventure right now.
And you, I know obviously you did a lot of work in the MuleSoft space as well, managing a platform engineering team. Like, how key has that acquisition been for Salesforce with all of this going on across cloud?
I think Salesforce always buy really interesting technologies. MuleSoft is one of them. Some of their machine learning platforms are another. Personally, I think the MuleSoft acquisition has been both good and bad. I think taking the Salesforce view of we make everything easy, which is their kind of their marketing view, clicks not code, bringing that to integration is really dangerous. Integration is a minefield of problems. If you're dealing with clean data or dirty data, you're dealing with distributed business process and or distributed master data management, integration is difficult. And MuleSoft for me was, or still is, a great product that does integration. So it's not Salesforce specific. And I think that acquisition is making MuleSoft a little bit too Salesforce specific. And I think that becomes a really difficult sell because integration is big, it is difficult, and it is expensive. So taking, which I then find Salesforce is a little bit of a juxtaposition of those viewpoints of we're quick, we're fast, we're easy, but integration isn't. So I think it's going to be a challenge because clients just want integration to work. But I think, or what I've noticed over the years is data's bad. And one of two things happen, and I still see it today, is our data's really, it's not clean, it's dirty, let's not integrate to it, it's too hard. Well, that elephant's not going anywhere. That your data is going to be bad in 5 years' time. You either fix it today and we actually make this system work properly, or it's just going to stay bad and you're going to end up with another silo of customer data or customer interaction data or product data that's dirty. So I think the acquisition of MuleSoft can be a great thing, but I think understanding how complex it is and the lack of resources in the market that can do the job is a huge problem for MuleSoft.
Because that's an equivalent of finding a good Salesforce developer, right? Finding a good MuleSoft developer, in some cases harder.
Yeah, I think harder. Well, I don't know. You would know better than I, but they're both incredibly difficult tasks. But to find a great MuleSoft developer who can also do architecture and can also face off into legacy and have an argument with legacy platform, that's a really difficult role. So you normally need a team. And if you do hire one or two, then the velocity that you can get through the work is so low, the client starts getting annoyed, like, oh, but we thought integration was easy and quick. And you're like, well, actually, we're down here talking about this system at the moment. We haven't even got to Salesforce. And they're like, what? So the size of the problem is not well known.
Sure. So you are no longer in consulting. What are you doing these days?
That's correct. So I've known this company for a while. Two of the founders used to work for me. They went and started their own business many, many, many years ago. And It's in the retail industry, and they're still in the Salesforce ecosystem. A company called Proximity Insight, and I love working with them, and I love working with them when I worked with them in the Quattro days, and I went to university with one of the founders. It just, the timing was right, and they've got amazing growth happening. It's kind of in that exciting phase of we've got growth, we don't have the people, we've got more clients coming, so it's just fun. And so their product is a clienteling application and much more in the retail space. Their feature roadmap's incredible. They've got so many great ideas. And like all things, you take this amazing application to the coalface, to the people in the store. That's awesome. But as we just talked about, there's normally integration to legacy, which could be POS, could be warehousing, could be all these integration problems. So I was really happy to go, you know what, I've spoken about this a lot with a lot of different people. It was time for me to take a break from consulting. It's been an amazing run for many, many years. But when COVID hit, I was kind of flying to Perth every week. So there and back every week. And I was tired. So moons aligned. And I said, look, I'm going to take a break from consulting for a little bit. So I left on amazing terms with PwC. And I said, look, I'm going to go back to be a developer for a little bit. Who knows how long? I am absolutely loving what I'm doing. I'm solving really interesting integration and data platform problems for a product. So yeah, it's been an awesome change, and a lot of those architectures that I've been talking about for years, and then I had my team go and build them, I'm getting to build them now.
And one question I was going to ask was, were you rusty when you got your hands dirty again? But from the conversation I'm sensing, you kind of never did let your hands get too off the tools.
No, I rightly or wrongly, I always felt I could never walk into a conversation with a CTO or a CIO and not have done what I'm talking about. So if we were talking about the possibilities of maybe integrating two systems or an event-driven architecture, or how do we modernize a platform with APIs and streaming, to talk about those kind of patterns, I always felt I need to have hands-on experience. So there was a lot of prototyping at home. There's a lot of building stuff. And this is the amazing things with platforms like Salesforce and AWS and Google and Azure. I'm not an Azure guy, so I don't talk about Azure. I've just never learned it, so I never really talk about it. Is you can stand up these enterprise-sized and grade kind of solutions and integrate them at home, normally on a free account. So over the years, yeah, any time that we were trying to solve a problem, I would tinker and create a prototype in the background so I could speak in an informed manner about the architecture, how it worked. This is how Salesforce best practices are for security versus AWS's best practices for different components of their architecture. So yeah, never truly got off the tools. But in the last months, I will admit there are a few moments where I had to kind of take a step back and go, cool, I'm that developer again. I understand why some of my developers were telling me it's going to take a bit longer from the original estimates when you hit problems that you didn't foresee. But I think that's part of the love I have for development, is you are constantly learning. And especially with these platforms like Salesforce, throwing you new features, new ways of doing things. Oh, that changes our pattern again. Back to the drawing board. What's our framework now using this feature and function? So I've missed it, and I'm really, really enjoying being back in the seat.
I hope Lacey is going easy with his code reviews.
It's interesting. So Lacey looks after the product. I'm not a product guy. I tell everybody that, like, especially something like an app like they've got. I'm not a front end guy. I'm not good at that sort of stuff. It would be a very functional box, but it won't look good. So what I'm building at the moment is purely housed within a hyperscale cloud. I won't say which one. And the beginnings of a data platform for us to do some very interesting features and functionality for our customers.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to see what comes out of that. But always a pleasure to catch up. I've really enjoyed hearing the story. And yeah, lots to unpick from that. So I really think there'll be a lot in there for our listeners. If anyone does want to reach out, maybe they've not connected to you in a while, or ask you a question about your journey or pick your brains, where's the best platform to reach out?
So LinkedIn is probably the best. I'm on there pretty actively. So, but yeah, I think, yeah, anyone that's worked with me, it'd be always great to catch up. I have left Sydney, that's true, if you are in Sydney. I'm not in lockdown, you are anyway, so we definitely can't have a coffee. But yeah, but also those that have maybe come close, like maybe if you're inside one of those big fours now and you're interested to hear a little bit more of my journey, yeah, feel free to reach out. I'm always happy to talk over a virtual coffee about kind of where I've been and where I'm going.
Nice. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, like I said, always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people.